And now, a man who's seen everything there is to see in commercial real estate, but understood very little of it, Building Engine's Senior Vice President, Scott Sidney.
Thank you for that warm introduction, and welcome to this episode of the CRE Tech Talks podcast. I'm your host, Scott Sidman. We're going to take a little bit of a different approach for today's podcast. In most of our sessions today, we focused on the technology end of things, the new CRE tech firms and their leaders, looking at the cool things they're doing, how they believe they provide value to the market, and their perceptions of what the market and decision makers need to know. We're going to elevate the discussion a little bit today and take a look at things from more of a macro level and from the viewpoint of someone who's in kind of a unique position of curating and collecting the perspectives of not only the technology community, but also has a direct pipeline to the investors, the owners, and the operators that control real estate and make the decisions that we as technology providers depend upon. Joining us from San Francisco today is Brandon Sedloff. Brandon is the Senior Vice President, Corporate Relations for the Urban Land Institute, or is commonly referred to ULI, who I've gotten to know a bit over the past several months and had the pleasure of meeting in person recently. And I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I think it's going to be something different and unique for the audience. So with that, welcome to the podcast, Brandon.
Thank you, Scott. Glad to join.
Terrific. Well, as you know, in keeping with our tradition here on CRE Tech Talks and as a way to break the ice a little bit and put us in the proper frame of mind, we ask all of our guests to share a unique or unusual fact or two about themselves and their backgrounds that the audience might like to know about you. So go at it.
Well, that's an interesting question. Thanks, Scott. I think there's a few interesting things I can share. We'll start in sequential order, but what a lot of people may not know is that growing up through high school, I was a competitive flatwater kayaker. And for those of you that don't know what flatwater kayaking is, it's the Olympic-style sprint kayak, which you use a paddle similar to your standard kayak paddle, and you race on flat water in a straight line as fast as you can for distances of 200 to about 5,000 meters. And I actually had to make a decision prior to going to college where I wanted to spend some time at the Olympic Training Center and pursue kayaking or go get a proper education in college. And I obviously chose the latter. So that's one interesting fact. And the other, which we'll talk about a little later, is I spent 6.5 years living in Hong Kong where I actually began my work with ULI first as a volunteer and then as staff.
That's really interesting. It's funny. You're the second guest we've had who made that Olympic decision, go or no go. It was Logan Sawyer from Aquacore, if you're familiar with him. Logan was, a triathlete or a long-distance marathon runner and shared the same kind of facts. So that's pretty funny. We've had those two experiences recently. Very cool. Great. Now that we have that out of the way, let's jump into a little bit of the meat here. First of all, I'd like you just tell us a little bit about your professional history and how you ended up at ULI.
Absolutely. So I've been a ULI member for about 13 years. For those of you that don't know, the Urban Land Institute is a member-based, member-driven real estate research and education institute. And so as a young professional right out of school, my first boss suggested that I get involved with ULI as a way to network, learn about the industry, and develop some professional and leadership skills that could be useful. And I immediately got hooked to the organization. The people were very interesting. The topics of discussion were very interesting. And so I began to get involved first as a quote-unquote young leader, which is a membership category that we have for real estate professionals 35 and under. And then as I moved in my roles, I moved up to the Bay Area. I focused professionally on my job at the time, where I had responsibility for running the real estate advisory business at a firm called Gerson Lehrman Group, or GLG, based out of New York. Effectively, their model is connecting people who have information to people who need information. So I spent my time working with hedge funds, private equity firms, investment banks, some corporates and consulting firms, helping them do due diligence on real estate. And while I was at GLG, they asked me to move over to Asia to help lead their real estate business and start it in the Asia Pacific region. And so in 2007, I did that. When I got to Asia, hit the ground, knew nothing about what was happening in real estate. Didn't really know too many people other than, you know, a few ULI members that I could call on. ULI was still pretty nascent. So I immediately went to the few ULI stakeholders that were there and said, I'm here. How can I help? And so while I was in Asia, I actually was responsible for starting and running the Young Leaders Group in Asia. I started about 17 different chapters or local councils, we call them, of the Young Leaders Group, everything from Sydney, Australia, to Manila in the Philippines, up to Tokyo, over to Shanghai, and everything in between. And that was a really rewarding experience. And for the work that I, you know, for the work that I did at ULI, they asked me to be on the board. So I joined the North Asia Board of Directors for ULI, where I served for several years before becoming staff. At a certain point, I decided that I had done what I had intended to do at GLG, and there was an opportunity at ULI. Our global CEO Patrick Phillips came to me and asked me if I would help kind of create a more scalable framework from a commercial and operational perspective to help the organization grow in Asia. And so I moved over to become full-time staff at the Institute, I believe in 2012, where I had a regional role helping to look after our operations, our content, our fundraising, our corporate development, membership, et cetera. And I did that until returning back to the U.S. in the end of 2013, beginning of 2014. So, you know, that was kind of how I got from the U.S. to Asia and back, and now that I'm back in the U.S., my role with ULI has expanded a bit. It's global in nature, and I have responsibility for managing our corporate relationships. So I work very closely with the larger companies and institutions that see their supportive ULI as an entity-to-entity relationship. So, you know, those include some of the major developers, investment managers, architects, engineering firms, construction and design firms, as well as some of the professional services firms, accounting, legal, brokerage, et cetera. So that's what I do on a day-to-day basis.
That's very interesting and an interesting trajectory. It's certainly not typical, both in terms of your experience moving over to Asia and then coming back again, but also in kind of the transition into real estate. So it's very interesting to hear about that. Before we jump into kind of the meat of our stuff a little bit as well, for those people in our audience who maybe aren't necessarily fully familiar with ULI, because I think a lot of the people we speak to are more familiar with some of the operational type organizations like BOMA and IREM, can you share a little bit about the core mission of ULI as well and what the objectives of the organization are?
Absolutely. So ULI was founded in 1936 in the U.S. So we've been around, next year we'll be celebrating our 80th anniversary. We're a mission-based organization, and our mission is to provide leadership in the responsible use of land to create sustaining and thriving communities worldwide. So it's quite a broad mission, as you can see. It really encompasses anything and everything related to land use. And our focus has changed over the years. But at the core of what we do, there's really kind of three pillars to ULI. The first is research and education. So we do quite a bit of research on our own and with partners. We also do quite a bit of professional development work where we provide training and curriculums on everything from, you know, real estate financial modeling to best practices in urban infill developments to architecture and design. So that has always been a core tenet of what we do, which is the research and education component. The second kind of major pillar is our events component. We organize over 2,500 events around the world every year. Now, that number can be misleading. Wow. Because some of those events are quite small, right? It could be, you know, a group of members meeting in a boardroom in San Francisco or New York or Shanghai or Munich talking about an issue related to their local market. But each year we do four rather significant events globally, two in the U.S., one in the fall called the fall meeting, one in the spring called the spring meeting. Wow. And each of those get between 7,000 and about 2,500, 3,000 people respectively. We have a major regional event in Asia each year called the Asia Pacific Summit, which generally happens early summer. This year it's in June. And then in Europe, we have several major events, but our marquee one is what we call our Paris conference, which happens in Paris in February. It's a regional or a pan-European event. It just happens to take place in Paris each year, and that attracts about 500 people. So as you can see, you know, we believe that there's a lot of value in bringing members together to learn and share and network with one another in person. So meetings is a very important component of what we do. And then the last is, I call it giving back. And giving back is really a way for our members, mostly folks who are a little bit more senior in their careers who have quite a bit of experience. We give them an opportunity to share their knowledge about the real estate and land use industries on a pro bono basis. So they volunteer their time. They take a step away from their job. They spend between 3 and 5 days with us on site at a different site each time somewhere around the world, providing their guidance on complicated land use issues. And we call that advisory services. So we've done a lot of work with different cities and municipalities and private sector clients around the world, helping them think through some complicated land use issues. Everything from what should we be doing with the Houston Astrodome to, you know, how New York City or New Orleans can think about building back after the natural disasters that each of those cities faced.
Well, it's very interesting. That very clear and well-defined missions and objectives. Before I jump on, is the Houston Astrodome still standing, by the way?
It is.
It is. I didn't know that. That's a good throwback. Let me ask then, jump in kind of building on that a little bit. Where does commercial real estate technology fit into those objectives? And maybe talk a little bit about your role there and why it's interesting to you and then to your membership, just kind of on a broad basis.
It's a good question, and it's not necessarily intuitive. So in my new role, which I took on the beginning of 2014, managing our corporate relationships globally, one of the first things that I do is I go to our members, current and prospective, and I ask them, you know, why ULI? Why do you participate in ULI? What value are you getting? What are you thinking about the industry? What are the important trends that you're seeing? What keeps you up at night? What gives you energy? And throughout the conversations, these are mostly with senior level executives, usually C-suite. I have to be very mindful of their time. I don't have a lot of opportunities to meet with them throughout the year. It's usually a one or two time a year occurrence. And so I really want to set a strategic framework so I can better understand how ULI can connect with their staff to solve problems and help educate, and also, you know, the role that ULI is playing in the broader universe. And one of the pieces of feedback that I kept hearing over and over and over again, it was very subtle, but it was coming up, was technology, disruption, change, technology, disruption, change. And I started to drill into it a little bit, and I very quickly realized that a lot of the executives I was talking to were aware that technology was fundamentally changing our industry or had the ability to do so, but they weren't entirely clear how or what that would mean to their business. And so there was this ambiguity out there. And so that was kind of the first step. The second step was I had a very fortuitous set of interactions and introductions almost a year ago to this day, where one of our members, Bob Lieber in New York, who actually is the chairman of ULI New York and happened to be the deputy mayor of economic development in the Bloomberg administration, introduced me to Jared Kushner. Jared is a big real estate developer, owner, investor, and business professional based in New York with business interests nationwide. And Jared and his brother have a venture capital firm called Thrive. And so through an introduction from Bob to Jared, and then Jared subsequently both to some of his portfolio companies at Thrive, but to a broader ecosystem, I was able to get hooked up with a number of different CEOs and founders of commercial real estate technology companies. And so I used that opportunity to sit down with the technology company founders and CEOs, these entrepreneurs, and say, you know, what are your issues? What are you trying to do to scale your business? What are your pain points? How can ULI help solve for that? What I heard from them was, well, look, at the end of the day, we know what we're trying to build. And if we want to sell it, we generally know how to go about selling it and who to call on. But what we don't really have is an opportunity to sit down with our potential customers and have a conversation about what's working and what isn't. Have a conversation about what challenges they have that we can solve for in an objective, non-commercial manner. And so when you put kind of the confluence of those three buckets, one was the conversations I was having from a strategic perspective with executives. The second was access to a very strong group of founders and CEOs. And the third was the ability to connect customers to clients in a non-commercial setting. What was created was this unique confluence of scenarios where what I realized was ULI has the customers and ULI has access to the technology companies. And if we could put the two of them together, we could solve for something that nobody else in the industry is solving for, which is an objective, forward-looking conversation about the challenges, the use cases, the opportunities going forward. And one of the, I would say, quote-unquote, advantages that we have is that there's no need to quote unquote monetize these interactions. So everything that ULI has focused on to this day at the intersection of technology and real estate hasn't been to make money or generate revenue for the institute. Even though we're a nonprofit, we still need to raise money to fund our operations. But it's really been focused on creating member value, and I think that that's one of the key reasons why we've had some success initially in connecting, you know, CEO and founder level entrepreneurs with CEO, COO, CIOs at some of the leading real estate investment management companies, operating companies, brokers, et cetera, to have this conversation.
Wow. There's a lot of good stuff in there that I want to break down into some of its component parts as we go forward. But as I said in the intro, I think that, again, puts you in a really unique, objective position to observe things from both sides, which is great. So maybe let's start with a little bit about your perspective in your conversations with the VC community and people like Jared Kushner and Thrive, and get some feedback that you've received in terms of why there is interest from them on this. You know, and we've had this recent wave of CRE tech startup and investment over the past several years. What are you hearing from them about their interest? Why is it happening now?
So it's a really good question. I'll do my best to answer it, although I think the short answer is it's opportunistically driven. Mm-hmm. And I'm not entirely sure that the VCs in general care a lot about the real estate space. I'm not saying they don't care, but they see it as an opportunity for change. That said, you know, one of the things that I've realized from talking to the VC community is that, you know, real estate as an industry is something that they're not generally comfortable with. It's interesting because people often say that, you know, real estate is not rocket science, you know, and you know, there's a lot, you know, people in the industry often kind of dumb down what it takes to be successful. But the reality is any of us who have been in a real estate operating company, development company, investment company, know that it's really, really hard work. And for those on the outside, they're actually quite, I don't know if intimidated is the right word, but it's almost kind of a bridge too far, right? Not entirely clear that they're willing to dig in. So I think that that's one component. And that's probably a reflection of those who haven't jumped in more than those who have. Mm. You know, our friends at CRE Tech, Pierce Nyken and his team, which in full disclosure, I'm a member of the advisory committee on or for CRE Tech, sent me an interesting deck yesterday. And according to their numbers, over the past 3 years, $370 million U.S. dollars has been invested in CRE Tech. And what's interesting is that if you look at the money raised in 2014 versus the money raised in 2015, in 2014, at least according to the data that CRE Tech has, there was virtually no Series B raises. Hmm. So there were Series A, there were Series C, D, private equity, but no Series B. If you look at 2015, over half of the money raised so far year to date has been Series B. So, you know, that to me is a reflection of the tranche of companies who have embarked on this road of capital raising from the VC community. There's been at least some initial success. They have some momentum and kind of the opportunity for VCs to engage at a slightly later stage, albeit quite early, being Series B, is a little bit more expanded than perhaps it was from 2013 to 2014.
That's some great insight. And for people who've been through that before, they know the importance of looking at that statistic, those types of statistics where, you know, you're looking at where follow-on investment is coming and how quickly it's coming. So that's really good insight. And I wasn't aware of that myself. So terrific to know. I know, you know, one of the things venture capitalists and people invest in this type of technology you're interested in is the opportunity for market disruption. And we've all heard the expressions, you know, in various forms about how far behind other industries commercial real estate is from a technology perspective. Have you seen any evidence of market disruption yet in this space or in the firms or the starting points?
You know, I think that's a really good question, and you know, I've been playing with quite a bit this notion of disruption, and you know, I think I'm not prepared to do it now, nor do I have all the answers, but I think a really interesting topic for a future conversation, Scott, would be, you know, how do we define disruption, right? And then how do we define it in the specific context of the real estate industry? Because, you know, disruption to me is creating something that we as an industry can't even conceive may exist down the road. And so that's a really big, big idea. But what I hear when I talk to a lot of the founders is that they all have a vision of what's next, or what the big idea is. But at the end of the day, in order to be able to get there, they need to solve for near-term problems of their businesses. They need to develop a product that is useful, a product that's scalable, a product that they can sell and monetize. And in order to do that, they need to build out their teams. They need to build out the back-end infrastructure. They need to go and raise capital. All that takes a ton of time. I think what we're seeing today from this wave of, you know, a few hundred commercial real estate technology companies that exist is that a lot of them are laying the foundation, which I have no doubt will create or lead to the creation of truly disruptive companies. I think today what a lot of companies that we're familiar with in the industry are doing is they're creating either new opportunities, new marketplaces, or they're creating significant efficiency in workflow. And what that does is that creates transparency, it increases the velocity that you're able to either evaluate deals or transact deals, and a little bit more fluidity. And one of the common kind of underlying themes of all of this, one of the big pushes, is more transparency in the industry, more openness to share data. If you think about the industry, historically, we've been very, very, very adverse to sharing information, sharing relationships, and sharing data. Why? Because it's those three things that provide the competitive advantage that you need to be successful. And it's really more on the transactional investment management side of the business. So, you know, I don't know if that answers your question, but I think that all the that exist today are doing phenomenal work to create the foundation. I have no doubt that some of them will be truly disruptive because they're working on things that will pivot and focus on things that we can't even conceive of today. But right now in the near term, I think most of them are focused on solving for efficiency-related challenges, transparency-related challenges, and that is creating a lot of value for those of us in the industry.
Yeah, those are great points, Brandon. I think you articulated it really well. And I think when I look at other disintermediated industries, you know, information industries, you know, whether it's kind of travel or automobiles, when you buy a car, pricing and availability becomes transparent, right? And I'm not sure that, as you articulated, that's something this industry really wants right now. So that's a terrific point. It's funny too. Just as an aside, I was at a recent conference and I heard a panelist who was an owner addressing this issue, and he expressed frustration with the lack of disruption in the space too. And he said his idea of disruption was when a commercial real estate technology could reduce the $22 a foot he pays in brokerage fees, you know, or eliminates it. And I'm not sure we're going to get to that point with anything I've seen recently or anytime in the near future. But have you heard anything similar from owners or investors as well?
No, I haven't, yes and no. But I think what's even more interesting than that, and perhaps the point that I neglected to mention, is that, you know, when I said I haven't seen or don't believe that there's kind of true disruption taking place, I think we actually take a step back and move beyond kind of the ecosystem of companies that build themselves as real estate technology companies. As I said, I think that they can all be truly disruptive or revolutionary. But there actually are two companies out there that I think are fundamentally changing the real estate landscape. And it's not really a surprise to anyone listening to this podcast, but Airbnb and Uber. Sure. They're both technology platforms. Airbnb's business, as everybody knows, is to basically take up extra capacity in somebody's home and to provide the ability for all owners to connect with people who want to have an authentic experience. And if you look at how that translates to the real estate industry, you know, it's really pushing the envelope in terms of how multifamily owners, condo developers, residential developers are really thinking about the legal framework, how they develop, who their target audience is, and it's really fundamentally, I think, going to have a huge impact on the industry, let alone think about all the data that Airbnb is collecting, both on their guests as well as on their hosts, the people who put the homes up. So I think that's really interesting, and we're going to see kind of a, you know, more institutional institutionalization of business models like that going forward. And, you know, the irony here is they don't build themselves as a real estate technology company. They're a technology company really focused on the travel business more than anything, but having a huge impact on hospitality, residential, et cetera. You know, and then Uber is the other, obviously, you know, a transportation a technology company that provides you know, on-demand transportation. That's all fine and dandy. But if you think about the implications that that has for the way that people move around cities, urban mobility, move around the world, how goods and services get transported, and then ultimately the manifestation of business models like Uber into autonomous and self-driving vehicles, you know, the implications for land use development, owners, is massive, right? And that's something that a lot of our members are starting to talk about at ULI, the issues around urban mobility, autonomous vehicles, and the whole ecosystem of infrastructure and technology challenges that exist. It's something that, you know, we're going to be focused a lot more on going forward. And it's certainly very, very important to our members now that, you know, it's clear that change is coming.
Which tremendously interesting, because I think initially there was more of an antagonistic relationship with those types of companies, and it sounds like you're beginning to hear that switch a little bit and opening up to cooperation and creating value, which is a huge shift.
Absolutely.
And mindset. Yeah, that's really interesting. I wanted to ask, just from your perspective and having these conversations over the past couple of years, or as long as you've been doing this now, what do you see as the primary disconnect between technology providers and the goals of their goals versus what your owners, investors, your membership is looking for?
I'm not sure that I would use the word disconnect, because I'm not entirely sure that the real estate community, if I look at kind of the total scale of kind of institutional owners and operators, has really spent that much time thinking about it. I mean, there's dozens of firms that have gone very deep and tried to do technologies and provide feedback to the technology platforms. But I mean, if you look at the overall landscape, there's still a lot of firms who haven't yet adopted or even begun to think about technology and how it could impact their portfolio. I think, you know, there's a few things that are a cause for that. You know, one is because not all real estate players understand what technology in real estate means. And so, you know, an interesting anecdote is last April of this year, I got a group, about 100 people together by invitation only, leading property owners, developers, investment managers, and technology companies. And I sent an invite to some of our members in the industry, and I kept it purposely vague. I said, you know, come out, let's have a conversation about the intersection of technology and real estate. And I sent that mostly to CEOs. And I said, if you can't make it, but there's another appropriate executive on your team that you'd like to send, please feel free to let me know. I wasn't entirely sure what kind of response I was going to get, nor did I really know what the program was, to be honest, but I just figured if I can get the right people in the room, I could deliver something of value. Turns out I got a plethora of responses. About a third of the people wrote back to me thinking that we were having a conversation about corporate real estate and occupiers. So, you know, what is Facebook and Google and Apple thinking? How do I get them into my building? About a third of the people got back to me saying, you know, they thought we were talking about, you know, construction-related technologies and design-related technologies. So how do they build better, faster, more efficiently? And about a third of the people had no idea, but they said it sounds interesting, and they were willing to carve out a half a day to be there. So, you know, I think what that tells us is that we're still in very, very, very early stage of this whole progression around how technology can change real estate. But there is today, more than perhaps ever before, at least a willingness to learn. Yeah. A few of the things that we've identified that I think are critical in terms of progressing forward, in addition to fundamentally changing behaviors, which I think is probably the number one, firms need to create a workflow around how to evaluate and ultimately implement new technologies. Something as simple as, if I'm going to sell my technology services to one of the largest asset managers in the world, who do I go talk to? Do I talk to the CIO, being the chief investment officer? Do I talk to the CIO, being the chief information officer, CTO, COO, CFO? Do I talk to a head of acquisition, a head of asset management, a head of leasing? Who do I talk to? There's no, most of these companies, with the exception of, you know, the several dozen that I mentioned that are more advanced, have not really defined how they want to handle, evaluate, and ultimately implement these new technologies. So there's a lot of ambiguity around that. And ultimately, those who are quote-unquote early adopters are early adopters because they have progressive individuals within inside their companies who are willing to take risks, who are willing to put their neck out there. You have to realize, for those of us who are in this space all day, like you are, Scott, you know, we deal with a very progressive set of people, probably not dissimilar from all the people listening to this podcast. The reality is, not all companies are set up to be opportunistic and progressive. A lot of the real estate companies, their developers, owners, et cetera, have done very, very, very well for themselves by being very conservative and kind of just watching, sitting back and following the leader while they make, you know, incremental moves you know, to grow their portfolios. That's very interesting, but what it means is that they're not going to be early adopters of these technologies. And so there's going to be a whole tranche of the real estate landscape that probably has no idea what you and I are talking about today, nor do they have any interest in learning today, but ultimately, hopefully, as things develop, become more and more engaged. And I think, you know, an easy way to get there is for firms to at least say, hey, we're willing to listen, we're willing to learn, and we're going to task an individual or a team of individuals internally to think, help us think about how to evaluate these opportunities as it comes about.
That another tremendous point, something I can attest to having firsthand experience with over the years, is exactly that situation. There's a tremendous lack of consistency from organization to organization in terms of how they evaluate, how they implement, how they, the decision process is, who owns this part of their business. And it varies from company to company. And I think, you know, the industry as a whole would benefit tremendously from kind of figuring that out right now. So, yeah, that's
absolutely. And yeah, just to further that point, I mean, an anecdote that your listeners might be interested in. I was talking to the CEO of a major listed real estate investment trust, a REIT. And, you know, when I was talking to him, I said, "So, you know, what do you think about the intersection of technology and real estate?" I always ask that question. I always keep it vague because, as I mentioned before, you know, I want to see how people react and interpret it. But I think it's really interesting. I think it could be transformational. I said, "Great. Well, ULI is very interested in it. I'm leading this initiative. I'd love your involvement, your firm's involvement. Who from your firm do you suggest I invite to participate?" You know, and kind of the background is, I'm thinking that this person who I'm talking to, being the CEO of a REIT, a very, you know, successful senior real estate executive, probably doesn't really have the time to sit in a room to listen to someone talk about emerging technology or new technologies. And he said, "Surprise, surprise." He said, "Me." I said, "Really? Interesting."
Yeah.
I said, "You, okay, I get that, but, you know, surely I know you're busy. It's hard to get on your schedule. I know you've got a lot of things on your mind. Why you?" And he said, "Because the culture of our company is not set up to encourage people to take big risks like this." So he didn't believe that, at least in the near term, any of his employees were going to feel comfortable or confident sticking their neck out there saying, "Ah, we should fundamentally change the way that we manage our leasing teams. We should fundamentally change the way that we, you know, look at property data. We should fundamentally change X, Y, Z." And so in order to be educated on that topic himself, he really wanted to make sure that he was connected to the senior executives and, you know, really understood what they were solving for. So that's the bottom line.
That's really interesting. Couple more questions in the time we have. You talked a little bit about the sharing economy and Airbnb and Uber. Any other kind of consumer technologies you see creeping into the commercial real estate space? Perhaps, I know there's a number of crowdfunding type startups going on in the space. What are your thoughts on those and anything else?
Yeah, I think crowdfunding is really interesting. Obviously, it's a big part of the real estate, or it's a growing part of the real estate tech ecosystem, and there's, you know, dozens and dozens and dozens of companies who are jumping into the game. You know, some are more advanced and sophisticated than others, and, you know, it's interesting because I have seen a willingness from institutions to better understand how it works and adopt it. But I think everybody's kind of watching with a little bit of cautious optimism to try to see how this really plays out, and also how some of these investments withstand the test of time, specifically how the underwriting holds up if market conditions change fundamentally. Of course, nothing's a sure bet. That's why, certain people are more successful than others. But, I do think that there's a significant amount of interest in the crowdfunding arena. Besides that, what I think is really, one of the things that I'm really fascinated with, being based in San Francisco for the global role, is all these different technologies that exist that could potentially be adapted or tweaked to solve for real estate problems.
Mm-hmm.
And these are companies that, you and I probably have never even heard of, but they're out there. And some of them are big data companies where they basically have the ability in ingesting and then analyzing and spitting out data, big data into manageable bite-sized pieces for, relatively lay people, if you will, can understand. Some of them are super advanced technologies around visualization and printing and all the other stuff that we read about in magazines and fast company. But if you look at some of these companies and you look at all the data that we as a real estate industry have, I just wonder, what if we could leverage some of the existing technologies that exist and figure out kind of new applications for them to solve for real estate related problems? So for example, how do you quantify gentrification? Right?
Yep.
The challenge, everybody wants to invest in a neighborhood and have gentrification. How do you quantify that? I recently, that idea was raised to me recently by the CEO of a big private multifamily developer, and he said, look, if I could quantify gentrification, well, what conviction and where I spend my time looking? Well, anybody who's tried to do it knows that there's certain data points that would be really helpful for evaluating how a neighborhood is changing. Those data points exist in the public domain, or they're easily accessible, and there's technologies out there that can help ingest those and many other data points to analyze that. And so if the output was a quantification, I don't even know if it's a word, but quantifying how a neighborhood is changing, think about the potential ramifications for that. That's just one example.
Sure. Yeah, it's a terrific one as well, and it's interesting because we tend to be a little bit insular and think of our real estate technology as its own siloed thing, and we have to start up and create it from scratch. But I think your point is a great one, and certainly valid, that there's a lot of good companies and technologies out there that could be adapted for a very large marketplace, and or incorporated into some of the platforms that are being created. So I think it's a good way to think about that. Yeah, that's interesting. So you talked a little bit about the beginning, and we're going to kind of wind things down a little bit about what the mission of ULI is and some of the things you're involved in. Maybe you could just talk a little bit about that, about how individuals and how individual companies and both the technology companies and the real estate companies can work together and contribute and participate in this conversation in a more enlightened way than just trying to sell. Or selling and buying.
But one of the beautiful things about ULI is that we're mission-based and member-driven, but we exist for the industry, right? So a lot of the work that we do transcends the barriers of our membership, and ultimately we're helping the industry and those people who are in the industry, provide leadership and responsible use of land, develop projects that, make money, integrate in the community, that are sustainable both economically, socially, environmentally, then we're doing our part. And so, from the perspective of our interest and focus around intersection of technology and real estate, we want to bring people together to help curate conversations like this and others to help the industry become more educated, more aware. We want to be a place where really smart people come to talk about what's working and what isn't, to take away ideas that then they can go back and figure out how to solve for. And so what that means is that we're very open to collaboration. We're very open to, having new people come in. The cost of membership, while there is a cost depending on your age and the type of membership you want, it's relatively nominal, and that even shouldn't be a barrier to entry if somebody can't bear the cost of a membership. We really want to have anybody who wants to be at the table, at the table. And we hope that, you know, over time, as we can kind of further develop, you know, our program of work around this topic, connect it to members, drive member value so that the industry can use it. And, you know, one of the things that I always tell the founders and the CEOs of the real estate companies that I talk to is that because this isn't revenue opportunity for us, we're not a for-profit conference organizer, we don't have any revenue or sales targets to hit, I want to be hypersensitive to remaining objective and also to our members and the industry's time. Mm-hmm. And what that means is I'm not interested in rehashing conversations that can take place elsewhere. And there's a ton of fantastic groups out there who are doing a ton of work way before ULI even started thinking about this on this topic. And I think that we need them. We absolutely need them, and we need them to continue what they're doing, both as organizations and as companies and in industry in general. And so, you know, what that means for ULI is that we want to be very collaborative. We want to be very open, and we want to be a part of the conversation, be a part of the community, but we don't want to get in the way of some of the conversations that are already happening. We want to make sure that we're moving the conversation in a forward direction. And so what I always tell people is, I don't know what I don't know. We don't know what we don't know. So we're all ears, and we would love input and feedback and involvement from anybody and everybody who thinks that they have something to contribute.
That's great. Well, as obviously a technology provider in the space and a company that's been doing this for a while, that's tremendously exciting for us to have things at this point where organizations like ULI are interested in helping further the conversation and the objectives and doing it in the way that you're doing it and approaching it. So, you know, from my side of the table, I just want to say thank you for that. It's going to benefit all of us. And I think you made a great point there that if you want a seat at the table, you have to participate. You know, you have to be part of these kinds of conversations in order to achieve your organizational objectives and then the broader goals of the market as a whole. So really great stuff. And I want to thank you for your time and terrific insights, Brandon. You've provided, as I said at the beginning, a unique perspective that we don't get to hear too often. And I think given our audience a lot to think about and listen to. So for more information on Brandon, on ULI, and how to connect with both, please view the podcast page. We'll have all that information there available for you and the ways that you can participate. So I want to thank you, Brandon, again. Thanks for joining us. It's been tremendous. Look forward to speaking with you in the future. Hopefully this was good for you as well. And look forward to talking again.
Thank you again for listening to this broadcast of CRE Tech Talks. We hope you found today's session valuable. Remember to visit our podcast page at www.buildingengines.com/CRE Tech Talks to download today's transcript and key takeaways, as well as listen to other sessions and share with colleagues. We'll see you next time on CRE Tech Talks.